First things first, I'm Jen Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. This is Nick Wright. Hump day.
Man, I'm feeling so much better today.
Yeah?
Yesterday, I was so upset starting the show.
Why?
People that watched the show, the Kevin Durant thing had it. It had me upset, had me in a tizzy, but I went out and played some golf with a good friend, Gus Johnson, friend of Fox. And everything he says, hello, Jenna.
Oh.
He knows you from the past.
Yes.
So I'm ready today.
Detroit, stand up. Gus Johnson in the building. I told you, Jenna Wolf.
He did.
I told you this
morning. In the morning meeting,
I'm going to tell you real quick. There was a question on the thing. She was like, I don't know if Chris is going to like this. I was like, man, Chris was grouchy yesterday. He was upset. Durant got hurt. He's going to be fine today.
All right.
So there we go.
So unfortunately, he's still hurt, but you're over the initial impact.
It was shocking.
Did they do something new with your toupee?
Oh, boy. Here we go. Big Wednesday show for you today. Nick's hair, C's hair, my hair. The USA women's team still scoring World Cup goals right now in France. The Knicks might have to make some new plans this offseason. We'll tell you why, but we got to start with the NBA Finals. Kevin Durant made his return Monday night, but that ended quickly. He went down with what Warriors general manager Bob Myers called an Achilles injury. No official word on if it is, in fact, that. Durant reportedly traveled to New York for further testing and evaluation. And according to Chris Haynes, KD was nowhere close to 100% before taking the court for Game 5 on Monday. CeCe, did the Warriors make a mistake clearing KD to play, do you think?
Of course they did. Of course. Whatever doctor, because we're a results-oriented business. So they might even have things to be able to back up what they said. But the end result was the first competition, the first time he goes onto a court, first time he sees live action, he blows out his Achilles. So there's no way that they can feel. Forget about the public. You saw Bob Myers. Bob Myers runs their basketball operation. Do you know, before the Warriors, do you know how many great players Bob Myers, that he had control of their career in the palm of his hands? Like, so that he's used to be able to make decisions like this that would benefit his client. Now he's working for the Warriors. And they, word around the NBA, they run things as good or better than anyone else. He's a stand-up guy. People trust him. But when you are talking about an athlete and one of the best at what they do, and you get the type of injury that he had on Monday, you have to be able to question it. Golden State's not sitting around today saying, you know something? We did the right thing. Well, if they're doing the right thing, why Bob Myers crying? Right? Because when you do the right thing, you have a conviction to what you did. You also have a bunch of information. And they cannot tell me, you know something? We put Kevin Durant out there at 5 straight practices. His body responded perfectly. We put Kevin Durant in situations in practice on the court when we stressed out his calf, his lower extremities, and it worked out perfectly. No. First competition, he blows out his Achilles. So I know in dealing with calf injuries and dealing with a couple great team doctors, Dr. Fisher, who was original doctor for the Dream Team, he was my team doctor for the Vikings, and I used to look him straight in his face and tell him, as soon as you get the X-ray or MRI, I want you to send it to Harlan Selznick, the Miami Heat's doctor, because I lived in Florida, and he was my personal doctor for 15 years. So I was always getting a second opinion. Sprained ankle, headache, anything, I was getting a second opinion. So I could understand the day after, the regret of everything, and you have to go back on everything I looked at, how his body was responding, and did I give him the right amount of practice time before I put him into a game?
And ask the very pragmatic and honest question of, if we weren't down 3-1, would he have played? Would we have cleared him? Was it situational because of the team's need versus situational to Kevin Durant's need?
I said, leading into game number 4, Toronto needs to win this game, and they're going to force Kevin Durant onto the court.
And there's another thing you said that I think debunks a bit some of the commentary afterwards, which was, this is tragic, this is awful, but no one could have seen this coming. Chris Carter saw this coming. And this is, there's an interesting debate going on in the NBA world. Jalen Rose got it going with a New Yorker interview about the overimportance front offices are putting on, if I may, guys like me, guys that consider themselves smart guys, analytics guys who didn't play, and the lack of importance front offices are relying on guys like Chris, guys that actually have been in it. And you see my pal Daryl Morey and a lot of front offices that I think are smart. Some people find them problematic in the way they do not lean on the expertise of having played the game. And this, to me, was a very real instance of, man, there is no formula and there are no numbers for me to understand what your body feels like when you have a torn calf, where the pressure points are. And the day after this happened, Chris said for 30 straight days till KD came back on the court, I don't think he's going to play in the finals. Why? Because he could blow his Achilles. That was the day before, the day of the game. I brought up the reports in The Athletic that there were teammates, seemingly, people within the organization questioning how hard KD was trying to come back.
And it upset me.
And Chris got angry and impassioned and said it'd be nonsense. If he comes back too early, everything is in jeopardy because you can stress the Achilles and pop it. Not restrain the calf, not have a setback. You can blow your Achilles. And then it happened. And so if Chris from 3,000 miles away from Oakland could see that this was on the board, of course it's the team doctors and Durant and Steve Kerr and everyone whose job it is to know what's on the board. But where I feel badly is Kevin Durant was in a trick bag on this one when he got hurt. Because if he never comes back and they win, then guys like me, who we know he listens to and cares about, get to say, told you he was a luxury, not a necessity. And that burns him. And if he never comes back and they lose, all of a sudden he's boxed in because he's reading the same articles we are that, wait, we got guys on the team thinking I'm dogging it, thinking I don't care. So his only solution was, what if I just come back and win? What if I come back and play great, answer all those questions? But that solution came with enormous risk. And we saw that play out in real time Monday night.
I wish Kevin Durant, and I know he's got great people around him, but a little over a year ago, we had one of our best basketball players in a situation where he said he couldn't play, and organization said he could play. There's only two people. And Kawhi Leonard, and that's his uncle, his business advisor, and Chris Carter are the only two people that said he's doing the right thing. Now look at Kawhi. Kawhi made it through the regular season, but look at the decision he made last year. I'm not going out there because my body does not feel right. He got criticized, and then we get Kevin Durant. Of all the top five players we have, none is less appreciated, none is more scrutinized from a negative standpoint than Kevin Durant. And he forced himself out there because of all those voices.
You really think he succumbed to the external pressure, the pressure from the team, from the Twitter sphere?
Oh, I think it absolutely played a part. I think what we know about Kevin Durant, sorry to interrupt you, Jenna, but what we know about Kevin Durant is he hears everything and it affects him. He is a sensitive guy, and that's not a judgment. I mean, people call me sensitive. Like, there's a lot but a guy that cares about what random anonymous people on Twitter are saying about a decision he made a couple years ago, you don't think he cares about on one side teammates whispering how hard is he trying, and on the other side people on television saying he's not that important?
So you think that factored into his return?
This is what I think is the number one factor. Every athlete that I know would have tried to get back out there. I'm just saying I wish he had people that can speak into you, that have that you listen to their voice. They help you make these tough decisions. I'm not trying to say I know all, see all, but I've torn both my calves. And when I used to sit down with the doctor, I used to let him know, are you going to be responsible if I go back out there and tear my Achilles? He used to tell me, no, I'm not going to be responsible. Well, okay, I'm going to go back out there when I feel like it, when my body feels like that I can do it. So I'm not going to blame them, but I asked Bob Myers this question today. If you weren't in your job that you are in now, and you are in your former job, and Kevin Durant is your client, and they are in game number four, what do you tell Kevin Durant? And I'm going to tell you, if Bob Myers is a truth teller, like I think he is, he looks into the camera and say, I'm so sorry, because if he was my client, I wouldn't have had him out there. We got agents calling us from around the league, Nick and I, and that's what they're upset about. You know how much money Kevin Durant lost when his Achilles? How much, Nick?
I mean, I was told yesterday they think it's in nine figures, not in NBA money. He'll get the max contract anyway.
But I
got a call yesterday that said the exact same thing, which was, why did his representation let him make this decision? And I understand, ultimately, your representation works for you, and you can tell them to zip it and go out there on your own. But The number of companies that were waiting for Kevin Durant ostensibly to come to New York City
and play next season.
Now, a lot of, listen, you'll still be in Nike and all these things.
But you won't be on the court.
But you're not going to be on the court. And companies that wanted to build an ad and endorsement campaign around you as a Knick, it's at least temporarily delayed. And now it's in jeopardy. It's a nine-figure potential haircut.
Right.
For Kevin Durant.
And the other superstar besides Kawhi Leonard made a decision because, Jenna, you were like, man, why isn't LeBron back yet? Because his body and the representative, the people around him, were telling him, you can't come back until you are healthy.
Back to game five now. So the Warriors were able to rally for a win to stay alive in the NBA Finals. The series now shifts back to Oracle for Game 6 Thursday night. The NBA didn't think we'd be shifting back to Oracle. According to reports, when the Raptors were leading with 3 minutes to go, the trophy was getting set to be wheeled out, only to be wheeled back in. Nick, how do the Raptors respond after coming so close to winning the title?
Well, that is the defining question of Game 6. Because through five games, Toronto has flatly been better. What's the biggest? The Warriors won game two because for 5 minutes they played almost perfect basketball and the Raptors could not hit a shot in that 18-0 run to start the third quarter. The Warriors won game number five. Why? Well, you could argue because in the 12 minutes Kevin Durant played, they were plus six. And in the other 36 minutes of the game, they were minus five, and that's enough for the one-point win. And because I thought the Raptors really melted down to a bit. Meltdown might be too strong. They, in the final 3 minutes, they didn't play their best basketball, and the Warriors played almost perfect offensive basketball, hitting those three-pointers on three-point field goal attempts. But how do you respond to being that close to a title? How do you respond for every player on the Raptors, Kawhi Leonard included, because he's a different place of his career, this being the crowning achievement of your athletic life, and then all of a sudden, you got to go cross-country into that building, a place that even though this year you have had success there and a lot of teams have had success there, has been a house of horrors in this league for the opposition for a half decade, and get a win to close it out right then. Or do you have a bit of a hangover from how close you were, and then all of a sudden, all the pressure rests squarely on your shoulders for Game 7? If they can respond to Game 6 like Game 5 didn't happen, they'll be the champions on Friday. Like, they will be here Friday morning, they'll be the champions. But if they have a hangover at all, and the Warriors can jump out to a lead, and Oracle gets running, and Clay and Steph get going, then we are could be headed for a Game 7 on Sunday, which I don't think the Raptors want any part in.
This is the thing that's funny. And you get into a series, it's amazing how we put more emphasis on what was the last thing that happened.
Of course.
Unless it was something significant as far as an injury, a person ejected. Like when you look at these teams and you look, we played five games, all right? There's four quarters of basketball. In those quarters, Toronto has been a better basketball team. Now, I don't know what people saw from a basketball strategy standpoint in game number five that they thought that, oh, Golden State got control of this. Golden State shot the ball. Unbelievable. 23-pointers. All right? They made 12 more than the Raptors made. Now, you think that they're going to be able to do that in the NBA's final game again? No, they're not going to be able to do that. What about Boogie Cousins? What about Kevon Looney? That center position, you think they got that solved? No, they got huge problems. And if we go back, series number one, round number one, Raptors are down to Orlando. Round number two, they're down to Philadelphia. Round number three, Eastern Conference Finals, they are down to Love to the Milwaukee Bucks. They haven't been down in this series because they've had control of the series. They have dominated the series. It has not changed. And the mystery of Kevin Garnett,
Durant,
he's not coming back. All right, so I think that the Warriors have more to respond to than the Raptors. Because you know what the Raptors have? A security blanket. We can have Game 7 back in our place. That's the luxury that we have. Also, we have the confidence of knowing that we can can take this team apart the way we have the last week and a half. I think Toronto gets the win. I believe they celebrate in Oracle. Oracle is shut down with champagne, a lot like the Warriors and how they bragged about how they spilled champagne all in Cleveland's locker room.
Back in 2015.
Tomorrow night, it's getting ready to happen.
And so the reason that, and I agree with a lot of that, that the Raptors have shown you through 20 quarters, in those 20 quarters, they've won 15 of them, tied two of them, and only lost three. Like, they have been the better team in this series. I understand that part of it entirely. Believe me, I do. That's why the biggest concern is how much of an emotional gut punch is those final 3 minutes. That when Nick Nurse called that timeout, they were wheeling out the trophies. And over the course of those final 3 minutes, the Raptors' offense, which had been playing so well, went 1-for-6 and scored 2 points. And the defense, which had done a good job throughout the series of staying attached, gave Stephen Clay good looks. And do you have a hangover from that? We saw the closest facsimile to this would have been the Ray Allen shot in Game 6 and then the response in Game 7. Spurs did not have a hangover in that game. Spurs came out ready to play. Tim Duncan had a little baby hook shot with 40 seconds left to tie that basketball game. He just missed it. LeBron then goes and hits the jumper, and the Heat are champions. But that team had more championship experience than this one. That team had more guys who had been in that moment at that level than this one. And that team had a coach who knew what the moment was. I think that.
So now we're getting back into, that's the same analysis you had before the series started.
Right, but see,
We have the luxury of seeing 5 games, but that's the same thing that the public said before game number one.
Absolutely correct. And now we will see how they respond to what I believe to be a emotionally devastating moment.
The most level team with the most level player. The thing that we said, the difference between Toronto now, because of Kawhi, they're not emotionally up and down. We saw after they won game number 4, what did Kawhi do? Walk right off the court, yep. Just like anything. We have to be able to give them credit. We can't start creating things. They talked about in the press conference, it takes 4 wins. It doesn't matter how many games, it takes 4 wins. And they're still, same goal. They are 1 win away. And the desperation is in Golden State because they threw out their desperation. That was Kevin Durant. They forced him onto the court in the last game. And there has to be a hangover from that. You think the fans in Oracle, they don't feel that? Kevin Durant not anywhere in the building. Kevin Durant might be in New York when the game is being played. I believe that we need to watch for as far as a hangover effect.
Time for stories to start your morning, brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. All right, Kevin Durant reportedly did travel to New York for further testing and evaluation on his probable Achilles injury. And according to Chris Haynes, Durant was nowhere close to 100% before taking the court for Monday's Game 5. Nick, with all that, what is KD's best option this offseason?
Whatever he thought his best option was before the Achilles injury, he should still be his best option. I believe that was always coming to New York. I think he will still come to New York. I know there's been some speculation, that he could opt into that last deal in Golden State. Basically, got hurt on their dime, recover on their dime. But if you opt in there, then you're doing your recovery out there. You're around those trainers, you're around those coaches, those players, when that's not your long-term plan. So I think it's what it was beforehand, which is coming out here.
Yeah, I believe he's going to still come to New York. I would advise him to come to New York. And I believe it's important that he's consistent in his messaging, because the free agent class this year, it's the catch. This is where you want to be. This is the best class you'll have over the next 5 years. So you need Kevin Durant at the forefront saying, yes, I'm rehabbing, but I just need an organization and one other superstar to believe in me to start building momentum that when they're going to put a championship team. Kevin Durant will be competing for championships, and it's important that he encourages someone else, someone like Kawhi, Kyrie, to be able to join him here in New York.
All right, moving on to Game 6 now. Warriors back at home, and they're favored by 3 points over the Raptors Thursday night. Nick, what do you make of the line?
Tremendous respect for the Golden State Warriors in this point spread. The fact that, as we've discussed, they have been thoroughly outplayed in this series. We obviously know Kevin Durant's not coming, that the Raptors won the previous two games in Oracle, that they're the healthier team right now. For this game, I didn't think the Raptors would be favored in Oracle, but I thought it would be a pick 'em. The fact that it opened at 3.5 is now sitting at 3. It is an amazing amount of respect the betting public is giving to the two-time defending champs.
This is what Vegas is doing. They're daring you to bet on the Raptors. Just the way that when they put the line before the series, they were daring you to bet on the Raptors. And if they put a line out there that is supposed to be what it is, either 1 point or a pick 'em, then everyone puts money on the Raptors. That's what they're doing, Nick. They've been doing this for years. I'm trying to coach you up on this. And I swear I know these numbers, but I just know people gambling how they sucker a bunch of you guys in the betting. This is a sucker bet.
To the NFL now, and it looks like the New York Giants have a legit quarterback battle on their hands. Pat Shurmur said the Giants will, quote, play the very best player. Your choices, just to recap for you now, Eli Manning and Daniel Jones, take your pick. See, any chance Eli Manning isn't the week one starter?
No chance.
None.
No chance. They need to stop lying. I get tired of the Giants lying all the time. Oh, man, Eli is playing great football. Remember, we were lying to him about the stats and everything. Oh, man, I watched all the tapes. I watched all the games. Listen, Daniel Jones can't beat out no Eli Manning, as bad as Eli is. And Eli's not going to be playing with any type of pressure on him. He's not going to play in the preseason games where they're evaluating him over Daniel Jones. Like, this is no competition.
So why do you think they see that? The part about this I don't understand is
because they don't know what they're doing.
So I just don't understand why you
yes,
would say
and you
this.
Can be doing a job for a long time
or
and still not know.
Or pump up Daniel Jones to make people.
But you pump him up to then just have a guaranteed disappointment, seemingly that he lost a competition. Why
no,
not
you
do what
get
you
get him
would,
in there earlier.
Right, no, I mean, I just why not do what I think most teams would do, which say, listen, Eli's our starter. Daniel Jones is going to compete to be the backup.
They were telling us that before the draft.
Right.
That's all they kept telling us. Eli's got a lot of football left in him. Eli's got a lot of football left in him.
And now they're setting Daniel Jones up to lose a competition.
So you can't contradict yourself and try to force him in when you told us that Eli can play a lot more.
All right, finally, moving on to football teams whose quarterbacks give us good sound bites, namely the Pittsburgh Steelers. They missed the playoffs for the first time since 2013 last season. With their divisional rivals on the rise, like the Browns and the Ravens, some have started to count the Steelers out. But according to the clean-shaven Ben Roethlisberger, even lost a little LB there in the face, that would be a big mistake.
We're still the Pittsburgh Steelers. We're still going to go out and try and win every football game. It's been a long time since we've been to the big one. But like I said, if everyone puts forth the effort that we all think we can and with the talent that we have in this room, we feel pretty confident that we can be pretty good.
What's he?
That Ben is so slick. Ben is, what? He's a professional. Ben said, mini camp, I'm going to get a haircut. I'm going to trim my beard, take my beard off. People are going to think I lost weight. But you don't realize, Ben, you still got that double chin, bro. Like, you're still a big dude, man.
Is he right, though, that the Steelers shouldn't be playing up the underdog role this season?
Well, this is the thing. Pittsburgh Steelers have always generated a lot of respect. So people doing shows, they can say whatever they want to. But the real football community, the one that really, really matters, they respect Mike Tomlin. They respect Ben Roethlisberger. They respect the Pittsburgh Steelers. Because as long as you've been alive, and I don't care how long you've been alive, the Pittsburgh Steelers, if they play in football, they're going to put a competent team out there. That's what they've done. Ben Roethlisberger is one of the best quarterbacks of his generation. And we know if the league is the same as it has been the last 20 years, and you got a great one, then you got a chance. The Pittsburgh Steelers have that chance.
I don't know why, though, they wouldn't embrace the nobody believes in us chip that seems to work so well in this league, that has worked for other teams, when for the first time in a very long time, it's a believable chip for Pittsburgh. Because, listen, we talk about them underachieving, but what is true, since, forget how long you've been watching, just over the last 5 years, since 2015, only the Patriots and Chiefs have won more games. Since 2015, only the Patriots have played in more playoff games. So this is a team that even during an era where we're saying they have not achieved to the level of their talent, they've been more productive and more successful than nearly every team in the league. But now all of a sudden, with the talent going out the door, with Ben Roethlisberger going into year 16, they would have the ability to say, oh, everyone's on the Browns. The Ravens were better than us last year. We're going to prove those people wrong. It just doesn't seem to be authentic to who they are.
I don't think the underdog thing works. It only works one place, and that's in New England. It don't work anywhere else in the league. There is no other team, franchise in the league that says, you know something? We're the underdog and it works. All right, people might try to manufacture that. Oh, lack of respect. They brought the dog mask out. They went on a run. That team played remarkable. All right, for them to be able to get home field advantage, that's how Nick Foles and them were able to win. But where else? There is nowhere else. People might say it as a soundbite in a press conference, but that only works in New England because it's an organizational thing. You can't adopt something in the offseason and say, you know something? This is how the organization is going to run. No, because guys at their own position, they don't feel that way. But New England, because of their stories, Tom Brady, all those teams passing over him, Edelman as a quarterback at Kent State, coming to be a wide receiver. They don't have all the household names.
Right.
They got a bunch of retreads and everything. So they're the only one that this works for because they do have less talent. The rest of these guys are brash. The other 1,500 guys in the league are like, listen, I'm good. That's the reason why I'm here. So you can't sell that to them. Okay. You're trying to sell them a lie.
I got to ask before we move on. Last year, the Steelers were your preseason pick. Of course, they did have Antonio Brown, at least coming out of the AFC.
Two years ago, they were my preseason pick to win the Super Bowl.
Last year, you were at least close. Yes. You kept rooting for them. Where do you have them this year? Because I know you're so high on the Browns.
I think the Browns are the favorite in the division.
I'm curious how much worse you think they are this year.
Oh, I think they will be fighting for that 10th win and fighting for that wild card spot. I mean, I don't think they're the favorites in the AFC North anymore, and that's the first time I feel that way about this team in quite some time.
And they could be the third best team in their division. Baltimore, returning from the playoffs, they got a nucleus of players that's going to have something to say about it.
All right, let's get back to the NBA now. The biggest offseason story this summer was already Kevin Durant and his impending free agency. Now add his Achilles injury, and it's become that much bigger, impacting both the Warriors and other suitors. The New York Daily News ran this on their back page Tuesday morning. Knicks lose game 5. Well, according to reports, though, KD's injury is not expected to dissuade teams in free agency. Nick Wright, will the Knicks' plans change at all, do you think?
I don't think the Knicks' plans are changing, but I'm not certain if the public fully understands what the Knicks' plans accurately exactly are. I don't think the Knicks were ever just going after Kevin Durant. And you've talked a lot about the Knicks' interest in Kawhi Leonard. They traded away Kristaps Porzingis, yes, to get young players, yes, to get future first-round picks. But they did it because with trading away Kristaps Porzingis, they could get off some toxic contracts that allowed them to have 2 max salary cap spots. Now, obviously, one of those has been earmarked all along for Kevin Durant. Is the other one earmarked for Kawhi Leonard? Is the other one, was it earmarked for Kyrie Irving, and now Kyrie is looking more interested in Brooklyn? And the way this could change the Knicks' plans is if Kawhi surprises a lot of us and chooses the Knicks, do the Knicks then say, we win championship right now with Kawhi, that second max salary cap spot. Yeah, we want to have Kevin Durant. We always wanted to have Kevin Durant. But we would then be sacrificing a bit of the contract with Kawhi Leonard by having that spot go to a player who's not going to play for us ostensibly for the first year. Now, maybe he'd be back for the playoffs next season. So in that regard, it could adjust it, but it only significantly adjusts in my mind if Kawhi Leonard were to choose the Knicks. The one other way it affects the Knicks is I think they are no longer players for Anthony Davis at all, because it was going to be Anthony Davis teaming up with somebody in Kevin Durant. And you don't trade for Anthony Davis when Durant's not going to be playing, so he's in a situation similar to the one he was unhappy in New Orleans, and they don't, and then he can just leave. So I think it removes the Knicks as a viable Anthony Davis contender because of the butterfly effect of this, but I don't think it affects the Knicks' pursuit of Kevin Durant.
I think the Knicks, this is tricky right here. Anthony Davis, the Knicks felt like they had a slim chance to get him. Because even if Anthony Davis comes to New York with the Knicks, he still was not going to agree to a contract extension. So they weren't going to be able to offer their best offer. It's like the Boston Celtics, what they've been trying to go through, because will AD sign there? No, he's not going to be able to sign there, so they're not going to be able to make their best offer.
So what you're saying is that when we were doing the Knicks versus Lakers trade possibilities, the Knicks including the third pick and all their young players, that's something we talked about on shows like this, but the Knicks weren't actually talking about it because they didn't think it would be anything more than a one-year rental for Anthony Davis even before the KD stuff happened.
I think around the league, people should be aware Anthony Davis is probably only going to sign an extension with one team, and that's the Lakers or the Clippers, if the Clippers decide to trade for him. But it's going to be in Los Angeles, the other teams, that being Boston, he said Milwaukee when he demanded a trade. Any of those teams, the Knicks, he's not going to sign a contract extension, so he will approach free agency next summer, and his name will be the top as far as the free agents to get. I believe the Knicks, Kevin Durant, if he wants to come to New York, they got to stand an offer. You can either sign it and you can come. I believe that it's hard to say this, but their priority is Kevin Durant and Kawhi side by side, not because of the injury. Before that, they were making plans. That's the perfect match for them. And to me, I think it's very, very unique because Kawhi, who last year, he was upset that people didn't believe in him. Will Kawhi extend the same thing that Toronto did for him to Kevin Durant and say, hey, KD, take your time coming back. Get your body right. I'll be here with these other guys. And is there any other superstar that would be more comfortable in that spot than Kawhi Leonard? I believe that's the most intriguing matchup, but they do have a plan B, plan C, which includes other free agents. Kyrie Irving, he does have an interest in playing in the Garden with the Knicks. Even though he does have an interest in playing with the Nets, he will play with the New York Knicks in MSG. And Kemba, watch for Kemba in Charlotte. If they can do a sign and trade and pair him with KD.
And with Kemba, in theory, they wouldn't even necessarily have to do that. They could sign him outright as a free agent as well. That would be another option.
Yes.
For that. The most nuanced part of this is if Kevin Durant, in the beginning of July free agency, signs a max contract with the Knicks, which I believe he will, how then do the Knicks use that other max salary slot? Do they try to roll it over to a weaker free agent class next season and just say, KD's probably not going to be back this year. Let's get the young players' experience. Let's get another good draft pick. Right. We have all these future picks. Or do they try to sign that player right now, see if they can sneak into the eight spot, and then have Kevin Durant, shining night at the end of the season, potentially show up for a playoff?
Yeah, I know the Knicks have a list of guys that they like, people like Marcus Morris, guys, established veteran players that would allow them to be able to win with that one superstar. So there's a number of things in play for the Knicks. Very, very exciting stuff, though.
I'm going to just say this. I'm done with the one-year rental, right? Paul George, he's going to one of the L.A. teams, stayed in OKC. Kawhi, he's going to one of the L.A. teams. It could very well stay in Toronto. So, AD, I say the Knicks make a play.
But isn't the flip side to that, if Kawhi might leave? If they win the championship and he leaves, then isn't that the proof that the one-year rental sometimes is exactly that?
If he leaves, Toronto was never an option. Now, all of a sudden, Toronto's a pretty good option. We're a far cry from where we were when he went to Toronto, where he was just going to only be there for literally the minimum amount of time and then leave. Now I think it's in play that he actually stays in Toronto. Let's just wait and see.
No, it is in play. You're right. What happened with OKC, Paul George is not going to stay there. He did stay there. And there is a good chance for Kawhi to stay in Toronto.
Welcome back to First Things First. Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Mannix joins us. Hey, Chris.
What's happening?
Welcome back, man.
How we doing?
Very good.
Good.
It's a nice suit you got there.
Thanks.
Man. Shoot, you look like you're almost ready to be on staff over here. Goodness.
All right. Now that we got that out of the way, back to game five. The Warriors were able to rally for a win to stay alive in the NBA Finals. This series now shifts back to Oracle for game six Thursday night. The NBA didn't think that we'd be shifting back to Oracle. According to reports, when the Raptors were leading with 3 minutes to go, the trophy was getting set to be wheeled out, only to be wheeled back in. Chris, how did the Raptors respond after coming so close to winning the title?
I mean, I feel like the story about the trophy being wheeled out is a little bit I mean, what do you expect? The trophy's going to be there. It's 3 minutes left.
It's in the building.
It's in the building anyway.
Yes.
So you wheel it right back around. Nobody on the Raptors could actually see it coming out there. I don't know what they need to change except mentally continue to be as mentally tough as they've been throughout these playoffs. Against Milwaukee, they go down 2-0. They don't get rattled. They come back and win that series with 4 straight. They split in Golden or split at home early on. That a lot of teams might be rattled by that. They go to Oakland and they win 2 straight. I think their game plan is pretty sound. There were some bungles at the end of that game. I thought the timeout was unnecessary. Mm-hmm. I thought the way they handled the final play was poor. But I just think they continue to play the way they've been playing and don't let this rattle them. I still think they can go to Oakland and win that game 6.
Well, and that is the question. To me, the trophy is more metaphorical for how close they were.
Right.
And they felt it. They knew it. That's one of the reasons I didn't like the timeout at 3:05 was not just because it stopped Kawhi's run. It lessened the momentum of the crowd to a degree.
It got into their heads.
It gave the Warriors a chance to regroup, but it also gave the Raptors 4 minutes, because it's back-to-back timeouts, to have the moment set in of how close they were. Mm-hmm. I think it's one thing while you're playing, while you're going up and down, to have that. You disagree, C?
I disagree that athletes in the moment think like what you're talking about.
Don't you think, tell me if I'm wrong, don't you think if any athlete's going to think that way, it's much more likely in a timeout situation than during a possession? I don't think anyone thinks while they're guarding Klay Thompson, 2:45 till I'm a champion, but in a timeout, I don't know what Nick Nurse said to him. I don't know what the messaging was. If it was just close it out like we always do, or guys, if we get 4 stops, we're champion. And which we've seen guys on those live films from after the finals where we see what certain coaches say to motivate their guys.
Yeah, you know how we show the coaches then? Because then the footage backs up what happened.
Right.
But all the time, the coach is saying, let's stay in the moment. All right? You don't think about that. In that situation, Kyle Lowry was exhausted. Kawhi was exhausted. So for the first minute, what you're trying to do is get some type of hydration and be able to get your nerves to calm down. You are trying to do every breathing technique that you have, and the coaches don't meet with you immediately. They allow you to get your stuff together. Yep. If you have something else to say to them, they meet amongst themselves, and then they come in, because this is what the coaches know. A player's attention span will only last so long. Mm-hmm. So you are in the moment. The Raptors have done everything almost the right way, even though they don't have experience, even though they've never been to the finals, even though we've never seen their coach in this type of position. So in that moment, athletes don't think that way. So we can't say that they blew it. What if Gasol gets a foul call with Boogie Cousins and he makes those 2 free throws? Those 2 points would have been crucial. They were down 3 at the time. But you are right. Do they recover from Nick Nurse not calling a timeout and getting a set play for someone besides Kawhi? Because you know they're going to take the
ball.
On
the final possession.
On the final possession.
So you think they should have called that timeout, the second timeout with 3 minutes left?
I would have called a timeout.
But is there not greater value? Yes, Kyle Lowry was gassed. Kawhi Leonard was tired. But on the other side, I mean, you got Steph playing 40-something minutes, Klay Thompson playing 40-something minutes, DeMarcus Cousins just dragging out there, who almost kicked the game away for them at the very end with some of the plays he made. I think there's more value in keeping the defense on its heels, especially when you're building some momentum there.
You mean for the last possession?
No, I'm saying for the last 3 minutes. Don't call a timeout. Power through it. Because I think they're equally as tired on the other end of the floor because they had to come back after that Kawhi stretch.
I remember Brian Billick got criticized because we decided to take a knee in 1998 and forced a game into overtime against Atlanta. But Brian Billick looked at me and said, Chris, what should we do? And I said, bruh, I'm spent. I'm exhausted. And right now, I'd much rather regather ourselves. We are a better team, and let's get to overtime. We're playing at home. After the game, we got criticized for it. But when he looked at me in that time, me getting a rest was the most important thing. Kyle Lowry, he wanted a timeout. Kawhi was just doing what Kawhi does. But there was such confusion. All right? And we know they didn't go on to win, but there was such confusion at the time, even though they had momentum. All right? I thought that was the right thing to be able to do.
Well, the best and I think only defense of the timeout is exactly that. He was listening to his players. That Lowry clearly wanted it in the moment. Now, it's not hindsight me criticizing it, because in real time, I tweeted out, I said, I can't believe they called the timeout. The Warriors wished they had. Like, the Warriors had used their second to last timeout with 5.5 minutes left in that game, so they couldn't stop this run. But again, it's all a moot point if they win for, if they win on Thursday. It's all a moot point if they are able to go into Oracle and recover. We have seen a team take an absolute gut punch, the Ray Allen game. And that the Spurs didn't win the championship, but it wasn't because they weren't recovered. Mm-hmm. They came out in Game 7 and played great. It was a two-point game with 35 or 40 seconds left. Duncan just missed that bunny where he slapped the court afterwards, couldn't believe it. So they were equipped to win that game. Miami just happened to be better. I think the Raptors have proven over 20 quarters of basketball, as C keeps pointing out, they are the better team in this series. The reason they would lose is if they can't recover from being that close to the championship.
The reason why they're going to lose is because their guard play. If they lose the series because their guards didn't shoot the ball well. Danny Green, absent two games. Van Vliet, we know. He got, man, I'm surprised he didn't have a concussion. He didn't have a big game in game number 5. So we need their guards to be able to play well, and all this other stuff is not going to matter. They have dominated. They have won 14 of the 20 quarters. For Golden State to have an advantage in quarters, they got to win all 8 quarters in these last 2 games. That's how dominant the Raptors have been. If we're looking at everything that's on paper compared to, oh, man, I lost an opportunity. If Kawhi Leonard has level set this franchise the way we think he has, and the reason why we gave them a chance to be able to win the finals, you and I, then it will play out in game number 6 or in game number 7. And listen. There ain't no less of a championship if you win it in 7 games against Golden State, who's won 3 of the last 4. So let's not get carried away. They lost one opportunity, but because they've dominated the series, they have 2 more.
The summer of NBA storylines got even steamier with Kevin Durant's injury in Game 5 Monday night. It not only impacted the Warriors' title chances, but it's seemingly affecting other teams interested in landing the superstar as well. According to reports, though, it's not expected to dissuade all teams in free agency. Maddox, you surprised teams are still interested in KD?
No, I was one of those reports. In the aftermath of the injury, I spoke to executives from half a dozen teams, and I just asked them in sort of a general way, would this stop you from offering Kevin Durant a max contract? The answer was no. And if you look at the circumstances of some of the teams that are interested in Kevin Durant, the Knicks, what options do they have if they don't lock up Durant to a long-term contract? Next summer's free agent class is not very good. Anthony Davis at the top of it, but we have no idea what AD is going to do once he's eventually traded. After that, it's like Draymond Green and then a few other guys. The Clippers, a team that's also interested in Durant, if they don't get Kawhi Leonard, they're in the same predicament. They were a feel-good story all season long, what they did after Tobias Harris, but they can't go into next season with the same type of group together. They've got to go out there and make a big splash. The bottom line is there are a number of teams out there that are willing to pay Kevin Durant for 4 years in order to get him for 3.
And that's how good he is. He's one of only the
And that's what they'll be doing.
And that's what now there is, listen, guys have come back from this injury in 8 or 9 months. And if you just play out 9 months from June 9th when he got hurt, you would say, okay, so that would mean he would be back for the very stretch run of the season and the playoffs if the team's
even though
enough.
This is a guy that got into this position because he rushed himself back too early, I don't think he's going to push himself back until he's 100%, which is most likely a year.
Well, I disagree with the premise that it's most likely a year. It could be a year. Dominique Wilkins said 9 months, 2 practices a day, 2 workouts a day, came back. He got hurt in the middle of a season, came back by the beginning of the next season, and averaged 30 points a game. Now, he is the best case scenario, the most feel-good story about Kevin Durant for someone that's dealt with an Achilles. But if you sign him, you have to recognize that what you're saying very well could be the case, which is he is not going to play at all that first year. But he is so good, even at worst case scenario, a 32-year-old, which is what he would be, coming off an Achilles. Guys at his level are a bargain on a max contract, so you can make it work when you'd be paying him for 4 years and only getting him for 3.
I think it's more important to look at the more recent injuries we've had as far as athletes, given modern-day medicine, given the techniques that are totally different than what they were 15 years ago. Dominique Wilkins, yes, we use him as someone that we talk about with Achilles because he was able to come back and play at a high level, and he's a very explosive 2-foot jumper. Like, that's all he's ever been. So him coming back was significant. But modern day medicine has changed so much. And the number one way to indicate how an athlete will recover is what type of shape are they in. So I think the last guy we saw tear his Achilles was Boogie Cousins. I think that's the best example. And if you look at Boogie Cousins and his body of work compared to Kevin Durant, so you can expect at least the same time frame, because Kevin Durant, his body should heal a lot quicker than Boogie Cousins. He takes better care of himself. He does more cardio than Boogie. Boogie has never been a well-conditioned basketball, even though last year in New Orleans was the best shape that we had ever seen him. So I just believe the last athlete, Boogie Cousins, is the one from a time standpoint. And Boogie might have been ready, but he had the luxury of waiting because he was in Golden State. I expect Kevin Durant to refocus his whole life with this galvanizing moment, and I expect to see the best Kevin Durant these last 4 to 5 years, wherever he decides to go. And I know the Knicks will give him a max contract regardless of what the injury is on the MRI.
Yeah, and I do agree with Jenna, though, when it comes to Durant specifically. If it's like April and he's cleared to play, I don't see him coming back. It's not the same thing, but Porzingis knew all season long he wasn't going to play. He was going to recover fully from that injury and go into a training camp next year. I think Durant will be the same way. I don't think you'll see him rush back to get into a playoff circle. It's speculative right now, but unless he's the Adrian Peterson of healing out there, I don't think he's going to come back and play next year. Now, what he should do is, if that max contract is out there, opt out and go and get it. This obviously, he has the option of triggering that option and going back to Golden State for $31.5 million. And there is something to be said about recovering on the Warriors' dime. But you have to look at the context of the entire league.
What's the benefit to recovering on their dime?
Not a lot. Not especially if you... Well, I guess the benefit is you can go and get
a full year. All the guys got medical insurance. You're recovering on the NBA's dime no matter
you're
what.
You're right, but I guess the hypothetical benefit is if you spent all year recovering there, the next offseason you get a 4-year deal. So it's essentially your 5-year deal at 30+.
That is the one benefit is exactly that, is instead of the contract expiring
right
4 years from now, it expires, but
is it a benefit because less teams have money? The Knicks can't wait. You just told us the Clippers can't wait. Like, can you go to a spot and build? Because this legacy is about.
Well, they might be forced to wait, though. Like, they can't wait if Durant's out there and available. If he's not available, some teams might be forced to wait. And there'll be teams that have cap space to give it to him.
But you're not advocating he opted.
No. This is what I'm saying. What I was getting to was, if you look at somebody like John Wall, and John Wall, back a few years ago, took the bird in the hand. Didn't wait for the Supermax contract to become eligible. He took his max contract number. He didn't roll the dice. If you're Kevin Durant, you don't know how you're going to recover. You don't know. There might be a setback. There might be a re-injury. We've seen it all the time in professional sports. You opt out because if you're told, this is where Rich Kleiman's got to do his homework, but if you're told that you're going to get a 4-year max contract offer, you go out there and you take it. You take that money when it's available to you.
And for the Knicks, this is a no-brainer. Now, what they do with the next salary cap slot is, to me, much more complex. Do they try then to wait on that? Do they try to let the young players develop? What do they do with that other salary cap slot?
What's the domino that falls with what the Knicks have to do? I mean, there's so many people that have to wait, and there's so many pieces to this. What's the first domino?
Well, Kevin Durant is the
so
first
we'll
domino.
So we'll wait and see what he does.
Yes. I think where the trickle-down effect is where it gets really interesting, the ripple effect throughout the league, specifically when it comes to Kyrie Irving and what Kyrie Irving is thinking right now after watching Durant go down. Now, there are a lot of people that really believe throughout the league that Kyrie's going to Brooklyn. Like, a lot of people really believe that's happening. But if Kyrie goes to Brooklyn alone, or if he goes with, say, Tobias Harris or somebody else, does that change the calculus? Does he go to New York knowing it might just be him in New York alongside Kevin Knox and Mitchell Robinson? Is he that committed to leaving Boston to go to New York, one of the New York teams, without Kevin Durant, at least available for the first year? That to me is the most interesting part of all this.
I think the way this lands for the Knicks, and I think you agree, is Kevin Durant signed with them and they sign a guard, not named Kyrie, but sign a guard named Kemba. And they have Kemba and the young guys and RJ Barrett as the core for this year. If Kevin Durant comes at 9 months into recovery, then that team should be, by the way, that team should be able to be alive for the playoffs. Kimba's kept Charlotte
How
alive.
How big would you think he's going to be, though? Like, do you think Charlotte's going to nickel and dime him? Like, that's
Michael Jordan?
Oh,
yes.
I do not think this they're
one guy. The Supermax, but the full max just because you're eligible for the Supermax doesn't mean you have to get the Supermax. Like, there's a number I think they could come to given what Kemba means to that organization.
Back to the finals now. Kevin Durant is reportedly here in New York for further testing and evaluation of his Achilles. And according to Chris Haynes, KD was nowhere close to 100% before Monday's Game 5. See, you think the Warriors made a mistake clearing KD to play?
I know it's a mistake because I have the ability to be able to look and see what the results were. And I know that they can't prove it out, being that they did they do the right as far as rehab? They did. Did they do the right thing as far as we're going to try to get him some type of exercise? Yeah, they probably did. But then there's that next critical period, and it's called court time or field time. If you're a soccer player, football player, when can I get out in my position and do functional activity? They said he played a little bit of 3-on-3, a little bit of 2-on-2. Jalen Rose, good friend of mine, said, man, he saw the workout last week, and it did not go well. All along, I was concerned. I tore both my left and my right calf, and I was always concerned about tearing my Achilles. I said the morning of the game that I was concerned about Kevin Durant, not the calf, but the pressure point to that calf is that Achilles, that attachment point at the bottom of your heel. And when he went to grab that, that was frightening to me. So there's no way anyone in that organization wakes up today with a clear conscience and say, you know something? I'll swear on a stack of Bibles that if I could do this all over again, I would do the exact same thing. And I believe that because Toronto, they win critical game number 4 and the pressure, it started mounting. Not only outside pressure, but the professional pressure that we have as athletes, that I want to be out there with my teammates. I want to. And that right there, Kevin Durant, succumbed to all those things, pushed himself out there, and we saw what happened. So there's no way no one in that organization is not sitting back and saying, you know something? I wish I had done it different. And I just believe this. If I put truth serum in Bob Myers, if I put it in his arm and put him in a chair and strapped him down.
Okay, this is graphic.
And he was, because he had a job before as an agent.
Yep.
And he represented a lot of powerful players, great players. And I don't think that he would have given Kevin Durant the same advice. If I'm his agent and I'm directing his career and he is less than a month from free agency. So what he did now in his job is totally different than what he would have done for his client in the last job, because his interest, his number one interest, is the organization. It is not those individual players. And that's where you get a lot of confusion when you're, does a player play or does a player sit?
But, Nick, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't in KD's situation, are you not?
Well, he ended up, for a guy who cares as much as KD appears to care about what is said and believed about him, he was boxed in at this point. And he was boxed in this regard, that you had guys like me saying for the better part of 3 years, he's a luxury, not a necessity. And I'm not being self-important when I throw myself into that. We've heard KD name check me specifically and others about that exact commentary. And then something every athlete I would think care about, what my teammates and coaches think about how hard I'm working to get back. You had all of a sudden a little leaky rumors and reports and sources that.
And that part I don't believe to be true. I don't believe that the Warriors thought Kevin Durant could have played. I don't believe Klay. I don't believe Iggy. I don't believe Steph. I don't believe Draymond. I don't believe those players, Boogie Cousins. I don't believe any of those players thought that he could be on the court with the injury that he had. And that's the team right there. I could care less about the rest of the guys.
But when people hear Chris say, of course he shouldn't have played, and wonder if this is a hindsight being 2020, Chris, for 30 days, was saying Kevin Durant was not going to play again in these playoffs. Why? Because you are risking your Achilles tendon. Not because you could hurt the team defensively. Not because the calf could get re-irritated. It's because of what you were worried about. And this is where the insight of, listen, I'm a math guy. I'm a numbers guy. I'm an analytics guy. We're seeing a lot of guys like me, some of them fresh off television, getting hired to front office jobs. Jalen Rose, in a different commentary, brought up with the New Yorker how problematic that is in the NBA, that they seem to be going away from the value of having played the game. Well, the value of having played the game, even though for you it was the NFL, not the NBA, was you've actually torn your calves. You actually felt the burning sensation in your Achilles and knew what Kevin Durant was going through there. So there is that element. And also, we have to tease this forward. The goal was not for Kevin Durant, when they cleared him, not for him to play game five. It's for him to play game five on that bad calf and weakened Achilles, and then play tomorrow on it, and then play Sunday. The goal was for Kevin Durant to play three games in 6 days.
I'm pretty certain I said that.
What?
He was not capable of doing that.
And that was, and the only reason you bring him back is because, well, you're facing elimination. You got to win that one, then win the next one, then
Meaning
win the next one.
If the circumstances were different, there's no way the Warriors would have rushed him to get back.
I don't think so, and I don't think KD would have rushed himself if they were up 3-1.
So
if
why
it was
do you
2-2.
Think he rushed himself? Well, from external pressure?
I think it was all of the above. I think players want to play. I think he's a competitor. Mm-hmm. I think he loves basketball more than anything in the world.
Yes.
And I think he heard the voices. But when we say, did the Warriors make a mistake, it wasn't just in letting him play. It was the messaging of this whole thing. What's Joe Lacob doing last month in May saying Kevin Durant's going to play in the finals?
He will definitely, told Stephen A., he will definitely make appearance in the finals.
How the hell does he know? And what's and he's the owner. Why did the Warriors, instead of just ruling him out indefinitely, slow drip this to where it was a constant storyline, to where all of those things, all of that led us to where we are right here today.
There's a constant theme in New England. That's why you never know about the injuries. A guy hurts his ankle, you don't know it's his ankle. He'll say lower extremity. So they made a lot of mistakes along the way. I just know that personally, that the interest of the organization, it always outweighs the interest of the player. And Kevin Durant, I hope he learned something from this. And Nick is my partner. But I'm just going to tell you, Kevin Durant, any other star out there, don't listen to people like him. You shouldn't give a damn. You shouldn't give a damn what they say. You're one of the best players at what you do. You are super special. Don't be listening to people because they don't know. You want me to tell you what they know? They know something about athlete's foot, rubbing their feet when they hurt. They don't know nothing about being an athlete. And Kevin Durant should listen to his body. He should give more in this whole thing. What he should get is a whole bucket of I don't give a damn about Nick Wright and other people who don't participate, because his body is his moneymaker. And his moneymaker took a tremendous hit. Now, I'm just going to tell you, as an athlete, I would have tried to play like Kevin Durant. I would have taken the responsibility that, no, it was me. It wasn't the doctor that pushed myself out there. And I believe that's one of the big differences.
And one of the reasons athletes pay their agents those commissions is not just to negotiate contracts, because KD doesn't have to negotiate contracts in the NBA. He gets a max contract wherever he goes. It's to protect you from yourself.
Stay in your ear.
And so this is where we criticize an agent named Rich Paul, a lot for advocating for his players too much. Rich Kleiman maybe should have advocated for his player a little bit more.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.